If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 358. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. We have a great guest with us today. But first, let's bring on my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It's going good. Just celebrated Christmas, so that was good. And now back to the grind of baseball. And we're rolling into the new year fairly soon. And before we know it, it'll be spring training. The year has flown by. And have a hard time believing that 2024 is coming to a close.
Didn't 2024 just start? I swear. It was like, I can't believe it's already almost 2025. But, yeah, it was nice to have, you know, a nice little break there on Christmas and, you know, do the whole family. Obviously, you know, running around with the kids and doing all that fun stuff. But always a blast, even if it is hectic. But back to baseball now and continuing our Dynasty and Prospect Ranking Series here. We did the second base prospect rankings earlier this week. If you missed that, go back and check that out. And now we hit the Dynasty side. And as I mentioned, we have a great guest. I think this is his third time in the shed with us, if I remember correctly. Our good buddy, Martin Sokolsky. You can find him on Twitter at m_ski22. He is a Dynasty content writer for Pitcher List and CEO of the Four Seam Fantasy Substack, link in his bio. Martin, how's it going, buddy?
Good, guys. Thanks for having me on again. And CEO of the Four Seam was very funny. I was just having a little fun with it, rebranded the Substack, and decided to play around, and here we are, CEO, apparently. So,
yeah, you could be whatever title you want, president, yeah. CEO, chairman, founder. Chris, what do you put for yours? You put your founder of yours?
Yeah, founder. It's kind of just founder, prospect, writer, something like that. Depends on the day.
That's a good thing about like working for yourself. And so you can be whatever title you want to be.
National prospect writer. Make it sound really good.
I know. Like, make it as glorious as you want to. Like senior national prospect writers. Throw all the fun, buzzy words in there. But yeah, obviously Martin's doing great work. Go check out that Substack. Highly recommend it. And we're going to go through Dynasty second base rankings today. This is a very, very interesting position. A lot of, you know, players that are trending one way or another. You know, we got a lot of fun prospects that will soon be added into the mix here. So pretty intriguing position. But before we get into that, the usual housekeeping here. You can find us on Twitter and Blue Sky. Chris is at Chris Clegg, MILB on Twitter, and at Chris Clegg on Blue Sky. I am at Eric Cross, MLB on both. And as I mentioned, you can find Martin at m_ski22. If you enjoy the pod, please rate and review. Make sure you check out both of Chris and I's personal platforms, the Dynasty.go.com and ToolShedFantasy.com, for more from each of us, including all of our Dynasty Prospect and FYPD rankings. And make sure to check out all the great content over on Rotoballer. Use the code TOOLSHED to get 10% off any premium package over at rotoballer.com. So let's start out as we usually do with our personal top tens and let our guest Martin go first.
All right. So I've got Mookie Betts, Ketel Marte, Ozzie Albies, Jackson Holliday, Travis Bezzana, Christian Campbell, Matt McLean, Jordan Westberg, Matt Shaw, who's probably going to go to third base, and Colt Keith.
All right, a few prospects up in there. Chris, who you got?
No shock, Mookie Betts at one, followed by Ketel Marte, Ozzie Albies, Jordan Westberg, and Travis Bezzana. And 6 through 10, Christian Campbell, Jackson Holliday, Jose Altuve, Matt McLean, and Matt Shaw rounding it out.
All right, so I also have, you know, we have the same top three across the board, Mookie Betts, Ketel Marte, Ozzie Albies. I still have Jose Altuve at four, but I don't know how I feel about that. Jordan Westberg at five, Matt McLean six, Christian Campbell seven, Jackson Holliday eight, Matt Shaw nine, and Travis Bezzana at number 10. So a few prospects in mind as well. As I mentioned, pretty nice prospect crop there at second base, including three, you know, that are pretty universal, at least top 15 or so guys. I mean, I have them all three of those guys in my top 10, but in Campbell, Shaw, and Bezzana. But let's start with the guy we have at number three. I mean, one and two are chalk. It's just a matter of how much longer does Mookie Betts have second base eligibility. Who knows year to year with him? He's so damn versatile. He could keep it as long as he wants to, pretty much. But Ozzie Albies at number three is who we're going to start out with here. I mean, obviously, Ozzie has had a few years where he is, you know, the number one guy at this position, or at least, you know, a top two or three option, and we all have him number three overall, so we still think he's a, you know, an elite player, but he's becoming pretty risky. I mean, look over the last 4 years, he's got two elite years in there where he, you know, had, you know, over 650 plate appearances, over 30 home runs, over 100 RBI, you know, right around 100 runs, you know, 103, 96, but the other 2 years he missed 98 games in 2022 and missed 63 games last year, missed, you know, 31 of the 60 games back in 2020. So the last 5 years it's been really hit or miss. You either get great Ozzie or you get injured Ozzie, you know, with kind of so-so production in those two injured years of 2022 and 2024. I mean, Martin, obviously, you know, you still have him three as we all do, but you know, is Ozzie someone you'd, even though you have him ranked that highly, is he someone that you'd be, you know, willing to invest in given the price tag it takes to get him, is, you know, given all the missed time he's had over the last couple of years?
Yeah, you kind of touched on it with his performance being really inconsistent. A lot of it's been injury driven, obviously, but he's a lot like the Aaron Nola of positional players where he's just kind of good every other year. So if you're an Albies owner in 2025, things look good for you at this point. But as far as Albies goes, I mean, he's going to be a solid, above-average contributor, actually, in three categories, and solid in steals and average as well. Ultimately, he's got one of those profiles that I just don't think is going to age well. He doesn't really hit the ball very hard. His league average and exit velocity with really poor barrel rate last year, 7%, and a 33% hard hit rate. He does hit the ball at ideal launch angles, but with his history of wrist injuries and wondering how long that's going to continue to progress, and with his batted ball data already being marginal, there's definitely some red flags kind of creeping up in his profile. But ultimately, he's going to play every day, and he's in a great lineup, so he's going to get plenty of at-bats, and he's going to contribute to you, at least for the immediate future. I think he's, what, still 27 or 28, so there's plenty left in the tank. It's just a matter of how much the injuries start to creep up on him and how long he can sustain his success with the batted ball data being kind of iffy. So.
Yeah, he's one where if you just looked at his Savant sliders, they would be very misleading because not a lot of great sliders are outside of a few of them. But yeah, he's still, I think he'll be 28 for next season, but I feel like he's been around forever because he kind of has. He's played eight major league seasons, came up in 2017 at age 20, and obviously had, you know, four or five really good years in there. You know, Chris, you know, obviously that whole, or most of that Atlanta lineup was either hurt or just down last year after their historic 2023 season. You know, where are you valuing Ozzie now? Do you think he's a good investment, or are you kind of staying away given the injuries?
No, I think he's a pretty good buy low at this point. I mean, I think people are certainly more in the camp after the down year that, you know, he is not as good. You know, I'm kind of curious. I've not done an FBC draft, so I couldn't tell you where. He's still going fairly high. He's a second baseman off the board, but 55 on average. Low is 81. So I think there is some buying opportunity. 27 years old. I wouldn't worry too much about the Statcast data. Like, he's never hit the ball hard. Even in his 30 home run seasons, you know, it was pretty poor data. He actually last year had the hardest hit ball of his career, new max EV. The sweet spot rate was down, and I think that was largely injury-driven, affected the barrel rate. But again, it's another case where the barrel rates have just never been all that high for Albies, and I think you can kind of live with that, given that he has shown some tangible improvements with contact over the years, and the chase rate's also improved as well. Now, the issue kind of comes down, like, we're looking, can he switch hit? And there's always been that debate as whether he can handle switch hitting, should he give it up? And it's always kind of an interesting argument because you look and he just hits so much better, at least from an average standpoint, versus left-handed pitching from the right side. And so it kind of was like, is he going to give up, you know, hitting lefty versus a righty? Because he could be effective either way. So you look and versus right-handed pitches a lefty, he hit 225 last year. So that's obviously far from ideal, 351 slug against. But versus lefties as a right-handed bat, hit 321 with a 519 slug. So way less strikeouts as well. He struck out just 12% of the time, you know, as a right-handed bat. So that's obviously an interesting thing to look at. You look at some of the underlying Statcast data from the splits too, and kind of paints a picture of like, all right, should he only hit right-handed? And there's kind of been that debate throughout. Now, you know, I don't know the answer for sure. I'm not sure if he's willing to give it up, but I do think that there's certainly still a lot to like in this profile. Yeah, I think that you get him back healthy this year, I think the Braves lineup will just be in a better spot, especially you get Acuna back. I know he's not guaranteed to be back early on in the year, but, you know, Ozzie's going to hit towards the top of that lineup either way, in my opinion. And so, you know, I think he's got to be a core part of it. So, yeah, I think that there's a buying opportunity still in Dynasty. There's some fatigue, but again, 27 years old. So he should still be solid for the next 3-4 years, I would say.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at, too. I mean, he's still entering kind of his physical prime. You know, he is on the smaller side, so I kind of share some of Martin's concerns about, you know, how does the body age as he gets like into his 30s? But I mean, that's still a few years away. But I think the Atlanta Braves lineup as a whole is in for a solid bounce back. I mean, it's too talented of a lineup, you know, top to bottom nearly, or at least the top, like, you know, 5 or 6 guys, for it not to bounce back, especially, you know, with the, hopefully a healthy Acuna once he's maybe missed a little bit of time, Matt Olson bouncing back, Ozzy, et cetera. But yeah, he's never been one to really hit the ball hard. As Chris said, like, his EVs have always kind of been like right around league average, give or take a little bit either way. He's been 88-89%, highest there is 89.6, highest barrel rate 9.3%, highest hard hit rate 39%. The hard hit rate's actually, you know, fluctuated a lot the last few years, 37.2, 26.5, 39, 32. I mean, it kind of coincides when he was with healthy and not healthy, but never had a big strikeout rate, just had the 1 year above 20%. And he, you know, hits the ball good to the pole side. Contact rates are above average. So, yeah, there's still a lot of good in the profile, even if it's not a sexy profile. It's still a good profile, so a lot of positives there. Not a ton of, you know, notable negatives and in what should be one of the best lineups in all of baseball. So, yeah, I kind of think he's a decent buy low as well. Next one here, this next guy is getting pretty hard to evaluate. You see a lot of different rankings on him now after a former top prospect status, but mostly disastrous rookie year. That's for Jackson Holliday, 208 plate appearances, / 189, 255, 311. Had a, you know, a little bit of a hot stretch after he got recalled, but that was really it. His first stint, and then after that hot stretch, in his second stint, was pretty bad. Overall, 33% strikeout rate. But at the same time, Holliday had a 45% hard hit rate and a 95th percentile sprint speed. So hit the ball hard and was running, you know, he's a quick guy. He's got sneaky athleticism as well, but kind of the guy we thought he was going to be, you know, the high average, high contact, hasn't shown up yet. I mean, obviously, he's still very young, and this is just 208 plate appearances at the major league level, still only 21 years old. You know, Martin, what do you think we're looking at long term with Jackson Holliday? You know, do you think he can still be an elite guy? You know, maybe more just like a top 10 guy. Kind of, what are your thoughts on him long term?
Yeah, so I'm still quite high on Holliday. I noticed that I had him number 4 overall. I think you guys had him like 7th and 8th or 6th and 7th, something like that. I really still think that there's a lot to like in his profile. He may not be an elite asset, but I don't think anyone ever really thought he would be necessarily. I think they thought he'd be like very good. And I think that's a fair assessment for him. I got into a little tiff with some guy on Discord the other day who basically said that Holliday's 60-game sample in the big leagues was enough to say that he wasn't going to be a good hitter. I think that's a little bit premature and a little bit aggressive.
A little bit.
The results weren't great, ultimately, but if you look at some of the metric stuff, I mean, his contact rates in the majors were right around where his contact rates were in the minors. The chase rate was a little high, but at the same time, when you struggle the way you do with the pressure that you had on that he had on him, he's going to chase a little bit, and he's just going to press. I think he got in his own head. As much as I pushed for him to be promoted when he did or around when he did, maybe it was just a little bit rushed. I think we've kind of, you guys talked about that with Adele Amador the other day. Maybe they just rushed him a little bit too quick and the expectations were just kind of too high for him. But ultimately, I think the pedigree, the talent, I think it all pushes through. And I think he's going to have a big year this year. I really do. I think he's going to be long-term, I'm thinking somewhere in the 280 range, 15 to 20 homers. I still think he's going to hit 20 to 25 steals at some point in his career. I think he's really going to be a really solid asset. He may not be elite, but he's going to be very, very good, and that's why I've still got him inside of my top five at the position. So,
yeah, that's totally fair. And like I say, he still, even through all the struggles, still showed some good qualities there. And obviously, you know, saw a lot better from him in the minor leagues, especially the approach. That's the thing that I think you should see that bounce back. And he's going to get some run at second base. Looks like they're going to run with him again as the starter there. You know, obviously he'll need to hit, or, you know, they've other guys that can step in. They can move Westbrook back over there, bring up Mayo. So he'll have to hit, but at least he looks like he should get another shot, as he should, obviously. You give a guy like this all the shots in the world, especially when he's still 21 years old and he was your number one pick a handful of years ago. But I put a poll out on the Toolshed Twitter earlier this afternoon, basically asking, Jackson Holliday will be a top blank second baseman long-term for fantasy. Options were top 3, top 5, top 10, or not top 10. Top 3 was about 15.5%, top 5, 27.5%, top 10, 36.5%, and not top 10, 20.5%. So it's still kind of a mixed bag there with where people are thinking Jackson Holliday will wind up. But Chris, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm just, in general, just a little lower on him. I've never been behind the 70 grade contact or 70 grade hit tool that he was given. Just the contact numbers never back it. You look since his debut and the contact numbers were good, but they were never like elite. And he was like the top hit tool guy that was kind of graded that way. Now, I don't think he's going to be like just an average hit tool by any means, but you know, you look, and Martin's right, the contact rates are fairly similar, but there is also a fairly big hole in the zone that he struggles with. Not to say that that can't be fixed, but I do think that this could be something where, you know, it could take a little time for him to learn to hit velocity up in the zone. You know, you look at pitches that, you know, were harder thrown, and there was some more whiff against those pitch types. Pulling up the exact numbers, because I do think that he was rushed. I don't think he was ready at all. I think that was pretty clear, obviously, by the performance, but I also think you can't judge his performance based on that small of a sample and him being rushed like that. And there's definitely some whiff against fastballs. There's some more whiff in the zone than I would like to see in the profile. And when he saw 95 plus in the minors, you know, it was about a 27% whiff rate. So it's a little bit concerning for me. Probably improves with time. Not overly worried about it. Holliday did show some good things, I thought, in his pro debut. I mean, he showed the ability to still hit the ball hard. despite the higher K and whiff, when he did connect, he was hitting the ball fairly hard, and I think that's probably the more underrated aspect of Holiday's game, is that he has consistently hit the ball hard his entire pro career. You know, 2023, I think he had an average EV of 92 miles an hour, and this past year it was up above 90 miles an hour in the minors again. So, you know, this is a guy that does hit the ball hard regularly. He's not putting up the high-end flashy EVs, but he does hit the ball hard enough. He has a good approach at the plate. He's not going to chase all that often, but I do wonder about the hit tool. I'm just never been super high on the hit tool. I think the plate discipline's good. I think that that's important to kind of differentiate the field of hit and the plate discipline pitch recognition skills, because I think you're definitely looking at plus plate discipline and pitch recognition from Holiday, but maybe it's probably maybe closer to average contact. Maybe Holiday's a 270 hitter, and that's okay. I don't think the expectation should be that he's going to hit 300 plus every season like that was set on him before the 2024 season. So I do think Holiday will be fine this year. I mean, I'd expect some power. I'd expect some speed and probably a lower average this year than many are hoping for. But I think long-term, Holiday will still be fine, and I think he's still a good investment. And right now, I do think it's a good opportunity to buy low because people are jumping off the boat, like, immediately, which is dumb. I mean, yep. 208 plate appearances. People are out on Coby Mayo after 40 plate appearances. And we could rant about that all day. I think it's a really dumb idea to do, especially for a 20-year-old that came up in the majors. But aside the point, Holiday's still going to be good, and he'll be fine long-term.
I mean, it kind of circles back to something we said a few times on this podcast over the years. We were spoiled with, you know, that stretch where we were getting like the Acuñas and Sotos and Vladdies and guys like that. But then the last few years have shown us that, you know, again, those guys are the exception, not the expectation. We have way more Jared Kelenics. We have way more Jackson Holidays. Even Wyatt Langford was struggling before he really kicked it on. So, you know, we have so many more of those types than, you know, I know we had some guys, you know, like Churio and Merrill, et cetera, that excelled out of the gate. But those guys are still in the minority in terms of, you know, rookie performances. So, yeah, it's like, what have you done for me lately, world? If you don't come up right away and meet your expectations, you're seen as someone that's, oh, well, maybe we are wrong on him. We can move on to the next shiny toy. No, I mean, yeah, I think, you know, Holiday, I think it's fair to say, you know, real life Holiday might be more valuable than the fantasy Holiday, but that's still going to be a pretty good player. Like I said, he still has good, good power. He's a quick guy, so could be, you know, like Martin said, got at first with like 20-20 or even a little bit more than that at peak. And even if he's 260, 270, he should have a good OBP as well. It's like Chris mentioned, that's why I kind of hate where like hit tool is kind of lumped together, where it's really like separate tools of contact and approach. At least that's how I like to look at it. And yeah, he's definitely more approach than contact, but I think he should still be able to hit for a solid average, give you a good OBP. Maybe he never stands out in any one area, but I don't think he's going to be a guy that hurts you in any one area either. So, yeah, I think he's still a good investment. I think he's going to be, you know, maybe not an elite guy, but maybe like a tier two, tier three guy in that 4 to 8 range of rankings or something like that, depending on how good some of these other prospects coming up are. And, you know, see if guys like Matt Shaw keep eligibility and stuff like that. But, yeah, Holiday, you know, way too early to jump off ship with him. But now we shift to a guy about 13 years older, and that's Jose Altuve. A guy that I thought was going to start declining a few years ago, but he proved me and others wrong by continuing to be, you know, a consistently good option. You know, 28-18 back in 2022, 17-14 in 2023, and only 410 plate appearances. Made it back to the 2020 mark last year, 20 home runs, 22 steals. Still hitting 290 plus basically every year. Still getting on base at a high clip, even though the OBP did drop as the walk rate dropped last year, but, you know, Chris, I'll go over to you first on this one. I mean, I think it really obviously depends on if you're a contending team or not, but you know, even if you are a contending team right now, would you still be kind of looking to maybe move Altuve here for a younger player and maybe trying to, like, move on from him even though he is still a pretty good player? Or do you think maybe, you know, it's the decline might be starting this year?
I don't know. I think that's the trickiest part of Dynasty, is being able to decipher when to sell or when to hold. And Altuve's such a tricky player. I think you could also lump Freddie Freeman in there, though Freeman is kind of a different beast in that sense. But the that age range where it's like, okay, like this guy is beginning to decline, still has value. Most people don't want him. He's going to dive at the beginning of May. Smaller frame, like y'all were mentioning with Albies. He's aged fine, like in all honesty. And you mentioned like what does the decline actually look like? And for Altuve, it's interesting because we saw the OPS from 2023 to 2024 drop from 915 to 790. He's still at 20 home runs, but that was from being a compiler. He had 682 plate appearances, and he had 20 home runs, stole 22 bases. I think you'll probably see the stolen bases decline more. Altuve gets to that poolside pretty well. Another one like Albies where he's never put up big EVs. Hasn't really mattered because he's effectively pulling fly balls. He's making good contact. And he's always been a great contact profile. So that's kind of helped propel the profile and help him stay relevant longer. The interesting thing is the chase rate has blossomed the last few years. He's always been 30% range, but the last 3 years, the chase rate's gone 29%, 32%, 37%. End zone contact rate's still really good. He's been 86 to 88% the last 3 years there. Hasn't really faltered at all. The overall whiff rate was up a bit last year, about 4 percentage points, but still in a really good range. So at the end of the day, with Altuve, I think he's still going to be good because he has a skill that he's perfected and he's in a good ballpark for it. I think you have to know the expectation going in, and it's that Altuve is not going to probably be a 30 home run, 20 steal bat, and he may not hit 300 again. I think a reasonable expectation, just given the contact rates, given the rolling batting averages that we've seen, I think he probably hits 280. I think he probably gives you 20 home runs. I would guess the steals drop to 15-ish, which is valuable, especially at second base, but can you get something good for him in return? And I think that's the problem, is that you're not going to be able to get a good return. People just don't want to buy into somebody at this age. You almost just have to take what you can get or sit on him, and it's not a great spot to be either way.
Now, let's say you were kind of falling out of contention. Maybe you were a contender, and now you're kind of looking to maybe start a rebuild. If you were to trade Altuve for a prospect right now, Chris, what prospect range would you look for? Like, what would be like the lowest you'd go with him?
Way too high, I'll tell you that. People aren't going to pay me what I want to get for him. I mean, the prospect crop in general is down. So, like, in general, when you compare Altuve in my dynasty rankings to, like, the prospects around him, like, I'm just not getting a top 10 prospect. And I think that's the issue. Like, where's the cutoff? Like, would I take Matt Shaw for him? Probably. I'm not sure people would do that. Like, but I think Matt Shaw, JJ Weatherholt, like, that'd be like the bottom of what I'd like to do, to be honest, just where I'm comfortable. But in reality, like, I'd really want something more like a Christian Campbell type, if we're being honest.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Yeah, I would love that. But yeah, Martin, you were a bit lower than us with Altuve. You didn't have him in your top 10, though. He's right outside of the top 10. But what are your thoughts on Altuve moving forward?
Yeah, Chris really hit on all of my talking points, which is why you guys are the best in the business. But ultimately with Altuve, you're right. It's really depending on what you're able to do with him as far as trade value goes. I was able to move on from him in two leagues this year that I was rebuilding in. And I was able to get some younger major league talent, starting pitcher and an infielder, I think, in each of those trades. But, I mean, he's 35. For some reason, they continue to produce at a very high level. Chris was right when he said that the profile is very much like Albies. The batted ball rate or data isn't there, but he always gets it done. So, yeah, it really just depends on what you're going to get. But I think you're going to be at the point where you're going to get kind of stuck with him as the wheels kind of fall off. And if you're going to get that with a 20 home run bat hitting 280 and 15 steals, sign me up. I'll take the value over that rather than trying to speculate on a prospect. So Yeah, until the wheels fall off, I'm riding Altuve. But I do have him lower just because of the age.
Yeah, no, that's totally fair. And that's always the hardest thing to try to figure out. And these superstars, when they start getting to be like 32, 33, 34, like, do I hold on to them? Do I try to, like, you know, cycle them out and get someone a little younger? You know, like another one that, you know, I've had in a lot of leagues, I'm kind of starting to think about that with, is like a guy like Bryce Harper, who just turned 32. I mean, obviously he's been a stud, but he's starting to get into that age range, and that's always just so hard. Like I think Freeman's already 35 or about to be 35, but he's been so damn consistent and good and great. Yeah, that's always the toughest thing. But at least with guys like Harper and Freeman, you know, the bigger guys, you think they'll age more gracefully. So I'm not like as much in a rush to get them off my roster as I would be with maybe like an Altuve. Though I don't think I have any shares of Altuve in Dynasty right now. But, yeah, you got to wonder, like, how much, you know, how long are 5-6 guys going to be, you know, producing at a high level? Can you do this at 38, 39? We don't really have a long track record of guys like that excelling into their late 30s or even into their mid-30s. So, but, hey, he's proved me wrong so far. So I thought he was going to decline 2-3 years ago, and I'm sure I wasn't alone in that. But, all right, so let's move on to the next set of our rankings here. But to recap the top 10s, Martin had Mookie Betts, Ketel Marte, Ozzie Albies, Jackson Holliday, Travis Bazan at 5, 6 through 10, Christian Campbell, Matt McClain, Jordan Westberg, Matt Shaw, and Colt Keith. Chris had Betts, Marte, Albies, Westberg, Bazan, Campbell, Holliday, Altuve, McClain, and Shaw. I had Betts, Marte, Albies, Altuve, which I'm going to move him down probably a few spots here, Westberg, McClain, Campbell, Holliday, Shaw, and Bazan. So 11 through 25, I have Luis Garcia, Marcus Semien, Colt Keith, Nico Hoerner, and Gleyber Torres at 15. 16 through 20, Xander Bogaerts, Bryce Turang, Bryson Stott, Jonathan India, Kevin McGonigal. 21 through 25, the hit machine, Luis Arraez, Luis Renjifo, Tommy Edman, the always intriguing Zach Gelof, who we'll get to in a little bit here, and the newest Toronto Blue Jay, Andrés Giménez, in rounding out my top 25. Martin, who you got 11 through 25?
All right. So I've got Jose Altuve, Luis Garcia, Marcus Semien, Gleyber Torres, Xander Bogaerts. Then I've got Brandon Lau, Michael Arroyo, Luke Kuechel, Jonathan India, Christian Moore, Jake Cronenworth, Zach Gelof, Nico Hoerner, Andrés Giménez, and Sale Stewart.
All right, Chris, who you got?
All righty, so it's starting at 11, another aging player, Marcus Semien, followed by Luis Garcia, Colt Keith, Kevin McGonigal, Gleyber Torres, 16 through 20, being Xander Bogaerts, Nico Hoerner, Andrés Giménez, Bryson Stott, and Brandon Lau, 21 through 25, Jonathan India, Luis Renjifo, Christian Moore, Zach Gelof, and Jake Cronenworth.
Jake Cronenworth is like the Buzz Killington of baseball. Like, he's like the most, like, he's a bit of a solid guy. He's like the most boring player to roster, I feel like. But we're not talking Jake Cronenworth. But let's go to another fun 2024 rookie who had a bit of an up and down year, but ended the last few months better than he started. That's Colt Keith of the Detroit Tigers. In 556 plate appearances, Keith slashed 260, 309, 380, but again, finished stronger than he started. 13 home runs, 7 steals, scored 54 runs. I mean, we all have Keith, similar range. I mean, Chris and I both have him 13th, Martin a couple spots higher at number 10 overall. I mean, I like Keith. I don't love Keith. Like, I think he's going to be more of a guy you maybe slot in as like a middle infielder. I'm not sure if he's ever a guy you're starting at second base. No, I think he could get into back-end starter territory. But, I mean, the power is pretty middle of the road. He's never been a big power guy. Doesn't run a ton either. So, you know, maybe he's upper teens home runs, you know, in around double-digit steals. So, you know, 18, 10 type of guy. You know, contact skills are, you know, probably going to be above average. He was above average zone and overall last year. So I think the average is actually going to tick up, and we saw that. I think he hit like 280 over the last 2.5 months or something like that last season. So I think you see maybe, you know, 270, 275, 18-10, something like that. Never been a big walk rate guy, so I don't think he'll be an OBP asset. So nothing that really stands out, but you know, I think he's more of a high floor guy. It doesn't really hurt you in any one area either. So I don't know. I feel like 13th where I have him is pretty fair to where he's going to be moving forward, especially some of these young guys like, you know, Campbell, Shaw, etc., end up being what we think they can be. So I don't know. I'm kind of lukewarm on Keith. Solid, but not spectacular. Martin, what are your thoughts on Colt Keith?
Well, I'm actually a little bit higher on Keith, obviously. I believe in the player. I really like what I saw out of him, even though he struggled a little bit at the beginning. Ultimately, he still finished after May 1st. He still finished 282 with 13 homers and 31 extra base hits. 115 WRC plus, just above the league average. And really that is baked in with a really terrible June that he had. He had like a 560 OPS in June, which wasn't good. But I saw a lot that I liked with Keith. His contact rate was pretty solid overall. He had a sub 20% strikeout rate, even though he struggled and was a little overmatched early in the season. The batted ball data was kind of meh, but I think that there's more in the tank for him. He had a 90 mile an hour exit velocity in the minors. I think there's going to be some more in the tank for him. And ultimately, he probably will still be a platoon guy for the foreseeable future, but he's on the strong side. He's in a good lineup that's improving, and I'm a little bit more bullish on Keith. I could see him in the 20 to 25 homer range, which may shock some people, but that's kind of what I feel about Keith long term. So I really like the player, and obviously that's why I have him ranked a little bit higher than you guys.
Yeah, and I wouldn't rule out 20 to 25 home runs at all. I mean, I think that's definitely possible. But yeah, I think he's solid. He's another one I did a poll on Twitter. Again, similar to the previous one, just Colt Keith will be a top blank second baseman long term for fantasy. Options being top 5, top 10, top 15, or not top 15. 5% had him top 5, 31% top 10, 42% top 15, and about 22% not top 15. So these polls still have like 18 hours left, so maybe you'll see a little shifting there. But Chris, you know, where are you at on Colt Keith?
Yeah, he's a really tough one for me. I think that the profile's there. Like, I like what he brings to the table. I don't love his home ballpark. That obviously is a factor, and you have to be really good to be able to beat the home ballpark of Comerica. It's not to say that Keith can't do it, but I do wonder if it's fringy enough power where it does hurt him a little bit. You know, his numbers at home last year, you look at the splits, he had 5 home runs at home, 8 on the road. So not a big difference. It's 4-game difference. So not overly noticeable, but he did hit 271 on the road, 246 at home, and about a 30-point OPS difference as well. Not noticeable enough for me to really care all that much about it, but I do think Keith kind of gives you a high floor type of bat where he makes good contact, he puts a lot of balls in play. He's kind of an all-fields approach, though. He's not getting the pool side. He gets a lot of balls up the middle, and it's a lot of grounders at that, too. So it's kind of a limiting profile at that. Kind of tells you this range, this position kind of shallows out quickly, in my opinion, and there's a lot of guys that are just all kind of in the same tier once you get outside of that top 10. And so Keith kind of floats in that range where it's like, he's fine. I think he's a serviceable starter, but how much does he really bring to your team? If you're in a league like a points league, he might play a little better just depending on the scoring settings. He does make a lot of contacts, I mentioned, but he's obviously not going to run a whole lot. He stole 7 last year. I wouldn't think he'd steal much more moving forward, but you never know. Steals come in a lot of different ways now in this stolen base environment. But yeah, I think Keith is solid. I think he's going to have a good career. I don't think he's going to be a stud. I'm not sure he ever gets like consistently like top 10 at the position, but maybe I'm wrong on that.
What do you think a peak season looks like from him in terms of like a value at the position? Like you think he can be like a, you know, top 7, top 8 guy at any point in his career, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I think he could definitely peak there. I mean, just given the contact rates, he's going to run into some seasons where he definitely hits for better average. he's going to get some more power naturally, just putting more balls in play. And if he can get a little more to the poolside, then all of a sudden you're looking at, you know, 18 home run power, and it looks a lot different. So, you know, it certainly looks like he could get into that top seven range at times.
Yeah, I wonder if he has a year where he's like 285, 290 with like 21, 22 home runs or something like that. I think that's definitely in the cards. But another guy that's kind of right around him in our rankings, who had a nice little breakout year in 2024, Luis Garcia Jr., still only 24 years old, even though he's been in the league for five seasons now. Another guy that came up at age 20 and kind of had just, you know, so-so mediocre production. Never was bad, but very underwhelming. I think maybe this is the best way to describe Garcia up until this year. And then, again, you know, he only scored 58 runs, but hit 282, 18 home runs, 22 steals. I mean, I had him on a couple of teams, and I lucked out into getting him. I drafted him late in one, picked him up in another. So he was a nice little saver at second base this year. But, you know, how much of it was, you know, legit? I mean, should we expect a 2020 guy moving forward, do you think, Martin? Or do you think Garcia is more of a sell high at this point?
Yeah, for Garcia, I believe in the player. I don't think we're going to see 2020 necessarily. But I think that 2024 was kind of the breakout that we had been waiting for with Garcia. He's always been really well, or he's always played really well with the contact rates. He's always made at least decent contact, if not above average contact. And for whatever reason, whatever happened with him in 2023 when they sent him down in the middle of the season, it just kind of sparked something, whether it was a tough love or whatever the case may be, whether it was a discipline thing. I don't know that it ever really surfaced, but something clicked, and I think last year was the start of that breakout for him. I went digging into some of his metrics, and each of the years of his career, he's had increased exit velocities. Last year, he got up to 89.1 miles an hour, and also had a hard hit rate of 41% with a barrel rate of 8%. He did raise his launch angle as well by 4% or by 4 degrees, which kind of gives me the idea that he was probably selling out a little bit for power. And it worked. He did sacrifice some contact, though, by doing that. But ultimately, he still had an 81% contact rate overall and 88.7% in zone, which are still above the league average. I think the biggest knock on Garcia is that he doesn't walk too much and he chases way too much. And that's going to ultimately limit his production, in my opinion. And I also don't think he's a 20-steal guy based on his size. I mean, he's like 6'2", 220s, a really big second baseman, and much bigger than I even anticipated him being when I looked into it, but much bigger body than I anticipated. But I do really believe in the talent. I think he's going to be a solid player for quite a while, and I think he's going to be a guy that could sneak up into the top 10 if he continues to hit the way that he is right now. So,
yeah, I mean, he's just been steadily getting better and better every year of his career, as you mentioned, with those the barrel rate and the EVs, and you know, hard hit rate ticked up as well. Never been a guy that strikes out much at all. I mean, each of the last 2 years been under 17%. You know, walk rate never gonna be anything special. So OBP leagues, he ticks down a little bit, but yeah, I think the, you know, mid to upper teens power is legit. You still gotta wonder, can he keep the, you know, that ground ball rate down a little bit? You know, it was only 48.5% last year, as opposed to, you know, 53% and above, as it was basically every year before that. He can use the entire field. And the fact that he was able to, you know, hit for more power without sacrificing a ton of contact last year was really encouraging. And even, you know, hit for more average than he had the previous 2 years. So, you know, a lot of encouraging there. But yeah, I do agree with what, you know, you said, Martin, about steals going down. I mean, everyone kind of ticked up last year. I mean, like, Matt Chapman had randomly had like 11 or was it 14 steals or whatever he had. Like, even guys that had no speed coming into the year were stealing bags. And Garcia's not like slow, but yeah, he's not exactly a burner either. So maybe you kind of cut that in half down to like the 11, 12 range. But if he could still give you, you know, 17 to 19 home runs, give you 10, 12 steals, hit you a solid average. Yeah, I think, you know, that top half of the Nats lineup is, you know, potentially pretty good. You know, if Abrams can keep his head on straight and not be out till 4 a.m., you know, James Wood, you know, emerging as a potential superstar. You know, obviously, they just got Nate Lowe. So, Definitely could be a pretty good top half of the lineup there. So hopefully, you know, maybe some more runs and RBIs next year. But Chris, I think, if I recall correctly, you were not the highest on Garcia. I think did you have him as like a sell high in our previous episode? If I recall correctly.
Yeah, I do think he's a good sell just because if you're expecting the steals to come back, I probably wouldn't. The lineup's going to be better. He's not going to have a need to steal. They're not going to need to steal to manufacture as many runs. And in his lineup spot, like if he's not hitting towards the top anymore, then that certainly has an effect. Like the lineup got better. I mean, there's no doubt about that. You've now got Dylan Cruz in there. He came up at the end of the year. You've now got Nate Lowe, and he's going to hit in the middle of that lineup. I don't have in front of me where he hit all last year, but I'd guess he's going to be hitting a little bit lower. It looks like most of his games he hit fifth, but he did hit cleanup a decent bit. He hit third some. So I'd expect him to hit fifth or sixth this year. They may not be done. I think the Nats are still kind of doing some sneaky things. They're going to be a good team. But I think Garcia's need to steal and manufacture runs just won't be there. I think the power's here to stay, so I'm not worried about that. I think he's going to give you 18 to 20 home runs. I think the average is going to be fine. Like, he has really good contact skills, always has. But he is hyper-aggressive, so there's going to be some fluctuation. There's going to be some inconsistencies. But at the end of the day, like if you know the expectation, then I think he's going to be a fine option. But I think if you can sell high, then I'll probably take a shot on doing so.
All right. We got two more names here before we get into our breakouts. Both, you know, fun young players with some upside, but a lot of red flags in their profiles as well. Zach Galifianakis of the Athletics, Sacramento, Vegas, whatever you want to call them, the Athletics. And Nolan Gorman of the St. Louis Cardinals. We'll start. Maybe we'll put both these guys together because, again, they're pretty similar in a sense where they have the upside and have shown that at times, but it's been a massive headache rostering either of these two over the last couple of years. I mean, Geloff went 14-14 in 300 plate appearances in 2023. And still went 17-25 last year, so it wasn't like it was completely a lost season where he provided zero value. But the slash line plummeted to 211, 270, 362. And with Gorman, you know, he's been showing consistent power, 27 home runs in 2023, 19 last year in just 402 plate appearances. But career 222 hitter and only hit 203 with a 271 OBP last year. I mean, given their respective price tags, Martin, you know, would you be, you know, willing to or looking to maybe buy low on either of these guys moving forward? I mean, I used to be a big Gorman guy. I am not anymore. I mean, looks like they're going to try him again at second base. I just don't see that happening. And I think you might see, you know, Thomas Ajayi or someone else going to take that second base spot long term. But I just have zero faith in Gorman figuring out his contact rates are just not good. 70% zone, just above 60% overall. Galifianakis at least runs. You know, he doesn't have quite the power. He's, you know, solid or slightly above average power, but at least he runs and can provide 25-30 steals annually. So at least he has that, and going to a better hitter's park as well definitely helps. So personally, I think I would rather buy Galifianakis if I had to. I don't know if I want to, but what are your thoughts on these two here?
So with, it's kind of weird if you look, I didn't realize that Geloff was actually older than Gorman. It doesn't mean it's impossible because Gorman's been around for so long. Gun to my head, I guess if I had to pick one, I would buy Geloff strictly for the stolen base potential. I think there's room to fix Geloff if they can get him to be a little bit more patient. He was super aggressive in the majors. I think he swung over 50% of the time while he's been in the majors, but he wasn't as aggressive in the minors. And ultimately, he did hit for a little bit of average while he was in the minors. We know that the power is solid. We know that the speed is pretty good, if not elite. And if you can put those two things together and just get him to make at least league average contact, I think he could be a top 15 player at the position with everything encompassed in it. As far as Gorman goes, I have no confidence in Gorman at this point. He's the Cardinals have people coming that are going to replace him in time, whether Weatherholt moves to second base, the JC plays second base, whatever the case may be. I don't think Gorman has much longer of a leash in St. Louis as opposed to what Geloff potentially could have in California, wherever they end up. There's nobody coming in the A's organization. Max Muncy is the closest, I guess. Darnell Hernandez. I don't think either one of those guys is going to keep Geloff off the field. Right. And so ultimately, I think I'm going to buy into Geloff only because I think that there's still a chance that he can be fixed. And I like the stolen base upside as well.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot more options there in St. Louis than they have with the Athletics. And yeah, at least Geloff, like we both said, he runs still. So he can fall back on that. And I don't think he's going to be yanked out of the lineup as quickly. But I'm not even sure I have a high level of optimism with Geloff, but I think I have a bit more optimism with him than I do with Gorman. Even if you can just get Geloff to hit like 240, I don't even need that, you know, 267 like he did in his rookie years. Give me 240. It's still not great. It'll still probably be an OBP of 300-ish, which obviously it's not great either. But if you can get 240 to go along with, you know, low 20s home runs and upper 20 steals or something like that, you definitely still live with that, and hopefully maybe you have 70-plus runs in RBI or something like that. But I don't know, Chris, do you have any optimism or willingness to buy low on either of these two guys?
Definitely not Gorman. I'm definitely way out on Gorman. I know they're going to give him run again. The power's fun. High barrel rates. I'm just not into the profile at all. Geloff, y'all mentioned the floor with the speed is nice. He's going to move to a AAA ballpark. The power's going to play up. He may hit 230, may hit 210. I don't really know what to expect from the batting average. The whiff rates, the strikeout rates are terrible. They're honestly as bad as Gorman's, but he does have at least a little bit of a floor from the standpoint that he does provide with his legs, and he's respectable enough in the field where it helps the profile out a little bit. Gorman literally doesn't provide anything but power. He doesn't provide in the field. He doesn't provide the bat. He doesn't provide base running. And Geloff at least has something kind of holding him in the lineup. So I think there is still a chance that Geloff can become a little better hitter, but I'm not super confident in that. I will say I think that him going 20-25 next year is completely reasonable, and even if that's with a bad batting average, that may be pretty valuable.
All right. Chris, what do you think? When does the Nolan Gorman experiment end? Like, when do they bring up Sajazy or just start someone else?
Well, I mean, it should be opening day for Sajazy, I would think, but they're going to throw Gorman in there somewhere, it seems. That's kind of what they've said. Like, he's going to play, and they kind of just mix and match. Like, this lineup's really interesting. It's even more interesting now that, you know, Arenado and Goldie are gone. Got Wilson Contreras going to play first base, obviously. You've got Mason Wynn locked in at shortstop. I said Nolan Arenado's gone. He's not gone. It seems like he's going to be gone. I know somebody's going to hear that and get frustrated. I understand. Arenado's likely out the door, but I don't know. I just think that Gorman's going to find his way in the lineup again. At what point is he finally done? What does he have to do to not be in the lineup? That, I don't really know.
Martin, what about you? When do you think the Nolan Gorman experiment ends?
Probably when J.J. Weatherholt's ready. So I just feel like they're just going to keep giving him run until they don't have to anymore. And ultimately, Weatherholt could be ready by the end of the season, maybe. So it is what it is at this point. Arenado's likely out the door, like Chris said. So, I mean, maybe they'll just hit gold again with Gorman, but ultimately probably not. So my answer is when Weatherholt gets there, whenever that is. So
that's a good answer. We all love some J.J. Weatherholt on this podcast. But all right, let's close out the show with our breakout picks. I mean, not this wasn't the most star-studded position on the back end to pick some breakouts, but we got three names for you. And we don't even have to leave the St. Louis Cardinals for Martins. Who you got there, Martin?
Yeah, I'm going to go Thomas Ajayi. Like we said, Gorman's not inspiring, and Nolan Arenado's likely headed elsewhere. So either Gorman's going to pop the third base or Sajayi's going to play third base, but Either way, I think that Sajacy could be a productive player. He's had three straight seasons of 15 homers, 20 doubles, and an average over 250 in the minor leagues, which is fairly productive. His batted ball data isn't great, but he's always produced, kind of like we talked about with Albies and Altuve both. There's definitely some flaws in the profile. He's super aggressive at the plate. He swings probably way too much and chases probably way too much as well. But ultimately, he's making good enough contact. I really liked what I saw from him in the Arizona Fall League. So I think that while he's basically got the same flaws as Gorman, strikeout rates, some contact concerns, I think he's going to hit for a higher average and still produce enough with the bat to play up. So he's my pick.
Yeah, he definitely was impressive out in the AFL in our live looks. But, man, that was 2 months ago now. Wow, that was, time flies. Jeez. But, Chris, who is your breakout pick?
I couldn't come up with a great one. It's just not a good group. I picked Will Wagner, who's not even going to play second base now that they have Hodges Jimenez, unless, you know, Bobichet's traded. But Will Wagner will have second base eligibility this year. I've always loved Will Wagner. He's just a unique prospect where he gets on base a lot. He hits the ball extremely hard. He hits the ball on the ground a lot. He's could provide home runs if he can lift the ball a little more. And I will say that his barrel rate was good enough last year to actually do so. And he hits the ball, like I said, super hard, going to make a lot of contact. He's not going to chase often. He's going to get on base. So Will Wagner is my deep league appeal breakout, but I think that he definitely plays better in a points or an OBP league, as you're probably not getting more than like 10 home runs and 5 stolen bases. So in a roto league, it's a fairly limited profile, but I do like Wagner.
Yeah, he actually was sneaky good when he came up last year. So mine is going to be a guy that I wasn't overly high on as a prospect, especially when he was in the Red Sox system. But I'll go Nick York. I mean, he had a sneaky good year last year, 12 home runs, 21 steals, 123 games, hit 355 for Triple A Indianapolis in the Pittsburgh system after he was traded over there midseason. And, you know, the numbers were pretty solid under the hood as well. You look at in Triple A, York had a contact rate just below 80%, EV a little over 91 miles an hour, and a 50% hard hit rate. Burrow rate was a little lower, a little too many ground balls there, but never going to be a guy that I think stands out anywhere. But can he just be like, just do enough across the board to provide some, you know, low end value? And maybe he doesn't play second base and it's still up in the air. Obviously, they get Nick Gonzalez. Maybe York plays some outfield. He's kind of played, you know, a little bit all over the place last year, some second, a little bit third as well. But probably second base or outfield are the two most likely spots for him. But he should get a shot this year. I mean, top half of the Pittsburgh lineup's pretty good, at least a few guys there, but the rest of the lineup has a lot of holes in it, so I can't expect he doesn't get 500-plus plate appearances in the majors this year, and yeah, I think he could be sneaky good. But all right, so not the greatest breakout picks there, not the sexiest, but still some guys that could be solid, you know, low-end targets for you. That's going to wrap us up. Martin, thanks again for coming on. Always a pleasure chatting ball with you. Close up the show here. What do you got going on, and what should people be looking out for from you?
Yeah, I always appreciate you guys having me on. You were the first to to give me a chance in this space, so it's always nice to connect with you guys again. Always nice to see you out in Arizona as well. I'm currently working on a Dominican Winter League wrap-up for Pitcher List, highlighting some prospects that played out there, which not very many high-end prospects out there. Jordan Lawler is about it, but so yeah, starting with Dominican Winter League, I know in January we're going to start working on team-by-team breakdowns for Pitcher List on prospects, and then on my personal Substack, just hitting on anything and everything I can, prospects, redraft, dynasty, just kind of chugging along and putting out as much content as I can. So I can't keep up with Clegg anyway, so I'm just going to try my best.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely go check out Martin, all the good work Martin does over at Pitcher List and on his Substack. Again, you can find the link to his Substack right in his bio on Twitter. And that's going to wrap up the second base position. We will be back again next week with third base. Got another good guest lined up next week as well. But until then, everyone take care.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. TNCs apply. Available in app only.